searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome in to this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this often hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you are having a marvelous Friday. Happy Friday to you. Welcome to the weekend. If you're having trouble keeping track of the weekends, then... just a heads up, it's the weekend, and welcome aboard. It is Friday, April 24th, 2020, and there's plenty to be talking about today. As usual, I've got more stacked up than I have a chance to talk about, and in today's show notes, you may be the beneficiary of that, because I may just dump the entire list into show notes today, just so you can see all of the stuff I had stacked up. And didn't get to. But that's just how, that's kind of how it works every day around here. Welcome into the Daily Perspective Podcast. We'll be examining, wow, hang on a second. I changed microphones and everything just slipped and started pointing at the sky. It's a list of things that will make you shake your head, scratch your head, and utter words like, because there's just so much strangeness going on. There's political news. It's just aside from the coronavirus insanity that's happening. And we'll be talking, of course, about coronavirus / COVID-19. Because why? Because we can't get away from it. That's why. That's why we can't get away from it. It's everywhere. It's pervasive. What do you do? I mean, seriously, what do you do? You've got to talk about the issues, and that's the issue. So many people trapped at home. So many people. And you know what's funny? Not funny, haha, but funny, oh, come on, is I have liberal friends on social, and they're on social media, and I see them posting things that just make me scratch my head. And I can't help but wonder, why do you want to believe this? Why? Why do you want to believe these things? And that's my, I guess one of the big questions for me is, why do progressives, liberals, leftists, why? Why do you want to believe the negative? Why? And why do you paint the positive as being unrealistic? Positive people realize, trust me, positive people realize that when they're being positive, they're being hopeful. It's an aspiration. They hope something is going to turn out well. Is it not better to be hopeful and realistic than to be negative and constantly looking for the next the next dragon around the next corner? And that's exactly how things are in the liberal progressive mindset. There's always an ulterior motive. There's always some evil being cooked up. There's always something. However, when you are a conservative, when you talk about evil, it's because you're seeing actual evil, not suspecting evil. Because conservative people tend to say, I don't know about that. I'm going to wait and see. And when we wait and see, we will either find verification or not before we jump on things. And we're seeing that kind of jumping on things coming from the press and from politicians who have to delete their tweets, who have to apologize, who have to, you know, have to take measures to backtrack and sidestep when they make certain statements. Although a true progressive... a true progressive is not going to back down. I mean, just look at Maxine Waters. There's an example. That's one prominent example. Look at Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Cherokee people.
Yeah.
Cherokee tribe.
You know they disowned you.
So proud you live.
They said, no, she's not one of us. No, she's actually right now, and this kind of falls in the absurd department. Yeah, she is one of a couple of congressional Democrats who are calling for a coronavirus containment corps. Yeah. They want government people to aid state and local health officials in tracing potential victims. Now, I encourage you to just take a breath, to give pause, to just hang on, because on the surface, this sounds like, oh yeah, we should, you know, somebody should be out knocking on doors to see if people are sick. That's not what this is. The proposal comes from Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Representative Andy Levin of Michigan. This is according to NBC News. The two lawmakers represent states having some of the highest number of cases of coronavirus. Both of them cited a lack of a coordinated national effort on contact tracing. Contact tracing. Warren and Levin are pushing the proposal that would mandate the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to put together a plan to hire, train, and deploy people to help health officials in contact tracing. Their plan would include Labor Department funding for state and local workforce agencies. Those agencies would then help unemployed individuals find jobs as contact tracers, according to the network news. Now, do you see where this is going? All these people are unemployed. Let's make them government employees. Ah, this is progressives strapping on their capes to be the heroes. Elizabeth Warren said, "To confront a national crisis, we need a proactive nationwide strategy, and the Trump administration is failing to come up with one." She added, "We need a national contact tracing program that will stop the virus in its tracks instead of us perpetually chasing it from behind." And by the way, just as a side note, Elizabeth Warren's oldest brother, Donald Herring, died Tuesday night, about 3 weeks after testing positive for coronavirus. And honestly, I will express my sadness for this. I'm sad for her, and I'm sad for her family, and I'm sorry this has happened to them. It's a terrible thing. But that doesn't negate the lunacy of what she's talking about doing. Lunacy. Also, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Generalissimo Andrew Cuomo, said he's teaming up with Connecticut and New Jersey to deploy contact tracing, a contact tracing army, with the help of billionaire loser Mike Bloomberg. Wow. "To confront a national crisis," Warren said, "we need a proactive nationwide strategy, and the Trump administration is failing to come up with one." That, one, is a bald-faced lie, and two, we're not supposed to have a proactive nationwide strategy. The reason being that we have a policy of federalism here in the United States of America. We are a nation of sovereign states, and each state is responsible for managing itself with as little interference and involvement from the federal government as possible. That is how our system operates here. Washington, D.C. does not run the United States of America. Washington, D.C. is essentially the ref. So, she's wrong about that. And she's also wrong in that doing what she wants to do would create something we don't want in the United States of America. And to illustrate that and explain that, let me ask you a question. Have you flown in the last decade? Have you flown since 9/11? Have you gone through the TSA experience? I remember right after that happened, the first time I flew, there was a TSA employee who stood across the gate from me on the other side of the device you step through to make sure you don't have any metal on you, the metal detector. And he stood there, demanded to see my driver's license, "Papers, please," and asked me about where I was from, where I was going. He grilled me, very serious. And me being Mr. Not Taking Much Seriously, unless I absolutely have to, obviously I've got some sort of a smirk on my face because he doubled down. But I couldn't help but think, this guy, probably last month, was working the night shift at a convenience store, and now he gets to wear a uniform and interrogate people. He's been through some sort of training program, and he's out here being Deputy Fife. He's got his bullet in his pocket, and he's ready to rumble. Do you really want another government agency knocking on doors, coming to your home? Do you want another government agency paid for by your tax dollars who will at some point, trust me, it will happen. They will at some point be empowered to go beyond their original mandate. How can I say this? Because that's what always happens. Do you really want this to happen? The Contact Tracing Army, the Government Corps of Contact Tracing, brought to you by the one and the only
Cherokee people,
Elizabeth Warren. No, we don't need this. We don't want this. It can't happen. Elizabeth Warren, who is, by the way, a hardcore leftist, she is a socialist. We might as well just go ahead and admit she's a commie. She's a communist. She wants government control of everything. For the good of the people, mind you, but she wants government control of everything. And when the government controls everything, you don't control anything. We really don't want that happening now, do we? Of course we don't. And I'll tell you something, the guy who is the presumptive candidate for the Democrat Party, former VP Joe Biden, thinks a lot like Elizabeth Warren. Get this. He's at a Democratic fundraiser, or speaking to a Democratic presidential fundraiser. He's been stuck in cyberspace, I should say, doing fundraising because of the coronavirus. And Tuesday, the former VP and presumptive Democratic candidate for president in November might have managed to make even liberals nervous with a disjointed explanation of why a pandemic that's killed more than 40,000 Americans and left millions of people out of work is something he's excited about. His own words. This is coming from a New York Times pool reporter. His own words. I believe because sort of the blinders have been taken off because of this COVID crisis, I think people are realizing, my Lord, look at what's possible. Look at the institutional changes we can make without us becoming a socialist country or any of that malarkey that we can make to provide the opportunities to change the institutional drawbacks from education all the way through to all the other things we talked about. And if I sound like I'm excited, I am, because I really think about this, the United States, I'm a student of history, the United States is one of the few countries in the world, whatever crisis they're faced with, we've overcome it. And we've always come out stronger, better. Joe Biden might think he sounds excited, but to sane Americans, he sounds unhinged and dangerous. The final paragraph, as published by New York Times reporter Katie Gluck, is particularly worrying. He says, we have a chance to really move the ball forward in the next 3 or 4 years. But it's going to take all you being engaged and us, you having, and all the younger people in your areas having the opportunity to participate. Leave the patronizing appeal to all the young people aside for a second. Democrats thrive on appeals to younger people who haven't heard all their lies before. It's the move the ball forward part that's worrisome. While Biden didn't go into specifics of what's possible now or the institutional changes that could be made, the fact that he's the likely candidate for president of the Democratic Party is a big clue as to what they might be, since Democrats have tried and are trying to force some of them into coronavirus relief measures. I mean, There's so many things that are possible under what he's saying here. Corruption of the secret ballot through the Democratic fetish of mail-in elections. Cherishing solar and wind power, replacing fossil fuels with that Green New Deal fantasy. Taxpayer-funded abortions using federal dollars. Reparations for slavery. Socialized medicine. Opening up the American Treasury to illegal aliens. Thanks to the coronavirus crisis. Right now, that's being formalized only at the city level, like in Chicago, or the state level in California. But can you doubt that a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president would take that national? Of course they would. And much more. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. The Friday, April 24th, 2020 edition of the podcast. Good to have you along. We were talking about Joe Biden. As much as I'd rather talk about practically anything else, trust me, we were talking about creepy Uncle Joe. And I want to finish that up because there's a little bit more to this. The rambling by Biden wasn't actually as pointless as it sounded. A lifetime Democratic politician speaking to an audience at a Democratic fundraiser knows darn well what kind of priorities his listeners have. He was implicitly promising to spend his presidency ensuring their priorities prevail. His statements are nothing new for the party, of course. South Carolina Democratic Representative James Clyburn, you know this, already gave the game away back in March when the House Majority Whip told congressional colleagues during a conference call that the coronavirus, quote, is a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. Clyburn, remember, was the leftist Democrat whose endorsement helped Biden win the Palmetto State in South Carolina's primary on February 29. That in turn gave Biden the momentum for the March 3rd Super Tuesday victories that effectively sealed the nomination. Clyburn is also the radical representative who likened the improving employment picture for black Americans during the Trump presidency to the days of slavery for black people in the South. He actually said that. I know it's hard to believe, but we're dealing with progressive politicians here. They will distort, twist, and manipulate things to suit their purposes in order to frighten people and to control them. Voting for Biden is voting for Clyburn and Pelosi and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and all the craziest elements of the Democratic left who would be competing with each other in a Biden presidency to drive the United States into bankruptcy. Biden let Americans know exactly where he stands in that fundraising call. He wants to use the coronavirus to change the nature of the country. And that's change nobody can believe in. And trust me, this is the common thread in the Democrat Party right now. They want to use what they, I believe, have created as a crisis. No, I don't believe they created the coronavirus. Please, please. I believe that they have jumped on this and seized the opportunity and whipped it into something it is not and convinced a portion of our society that we're all going to die if we leave our homes. And they want to seize on that fear, play on that fear, in order to get things they want. In particular, vote by mail. It's one of the things they want because they know how insecure vote by mail is. And please, when they try to pass off something else instead of vote by mail, because they will, like vote harvesting, which is having a government, I'm air quoting, a government representative come to your home and collect your ballot. They're putting more government employees. They're employing more people. It's just like the coronavirus, the COVID-19 army we were talking about a while ago, the testing army. It's another TSA group. Only in, it's all over the country, in every city, in every neighborhood. They're coming to your home, knocking on your door to take your vote. And trust me, we've seen how this turns out. So be prepared. When they talk about the mail-in vote and get shot down, their next thing will be, well, let's send people to the homes. Let's mail the ballots out. Let people vote at home, and then have qualified, certified government representatives pick up the vote and deliver it. Oh, nothing could possibly go wrong with that, could it? Well, look at Southern California. Southern California, a stronghold of conservative values. It's been, for a long time, considered a conservative place in a crazy state. And yet recently, everything swung to the left. Why did that happen? How did liberals, progressives, how did they end up winning office in a place that has been traditionally conservative for so long? Vote harvesting. Conservatives have been holding their own for so long, and then somebody got vote harvesting passed, and in the next election, the Democrats took everything. We've already seen it happen. And I dare say that California is probably not the only place. It's happening on local elections and the like in Democrat districts. We can't let them do this. It can't happen. The vote has to take place in person. It has to be intentional. There has to be effort. There has to be the drive to be involved and to make something happen in your country. You have to get out of your home unless there are true extenuating circumstances which prevent you from doing so. And then there are absentee ballots, and even those are fraught with problems. Do some research on absentee balloting, and you'll see there are issues with absentee balloting, whatever name you give it. But this is what the Democrats are pushing for. Instead of showing up at the polling place, identifying yourself with some form of official identification, a government-issued identification that confirms you and compares you to a list of people, so that we know the people who are voting really are who they say they are, and they are not just claiming to be who is on the voter rolls. Remember, the Democrats don't want the voter rolls in their areas scrubbed. They don't want them cleaned up. They say that's suppressing the vote. You're suppressing the vote. Well, we're only suppressing the vote of dead people. We're suppressing the vote of people who no longer live in your area and can't legally vote there anymore. But oh no, we can't suppress those votes, can we, Democrats? Just watch. This is what's happening in America today. This will be the push. And as I've said before, the Democrats right now want everybody scared to death of the coronavirus. They want them to stay in their homes so they can manipulate the election coming up in November. That's exactly what they want to do. And Joe Biden, creepy Uncle Joe, the basement campaigner, the presumptive Democrat nominee, yesterday predicted that President Trump is going to work to delay the election during the coronavirus outbreak. That's according to a pool report. His reported comments come after Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. disease expert, said in an interview that he could not guarantee that it will be safe to physically vote at polls in November due to the coronavirus. Let me break here for a second. By the way, the article coming from Fox News. He also didn't guarantee that we couldn't, that the conditions wouldn't allow. He didn't guarantee either way. He's just being cautious. That's what he's supposed to do. He said, mark my words, I think he's going to try to kick back the election somehow, come up with some rationale why it can't be held. That's the only way he thinks he can possibly win. He said that during an online campaign event, according again to a pool report. Well, you know what? That's not true. And Joe Biden and the Democrat Party know that's not true. That's why they're staging another investigation and they're prepping the grounds for another impeachment process. That's why they're doing everything they're doing right now. They know Joe Biden can't win. Biden blasted Trump for working to block emergency funding for the cash-strapped U.S. Postal Service, which would handle tens of millions of ballots this fall. Biden said it's evidence that Trump already is trying to undermine the election and make it more difficult for Americans to vote. Quote, we have to make it easier for everybody to be able to vote, particularly if we're still basically the kind of locked under the lockdown circumstances we are now. But that takes a lot of money. It's going to require us to provide money for states and insist they provide mail-in ballots. In other words, government money, which is your money. There is no such thing as government money. Your tax dollars provided to states to fund the effort to destabilize and make the vote less secure and more susceptible to fraud. That's what Joe Biden and the Democrats want. They want vote by mail because they know that's the only way they can win. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Happy Friday, y'all. It is the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. It's great to have you here. Thanks for coming along for the ride. Can we go back to a topic from earlier? Elizabeth Warren wanted us to put together this contact crew, these people tracking people to see who they are, who's infected, who's not, where they've been, where they're going, that kind of a stuff.
Papers, please.
And she's not alone. You remember Gretchen Whitmer, the governor in Michigan, who condemned Trump for his hydroxychloroquine statements. I mean, he gives this optimistic thing. Hey, it looks like this is doing good. We might want to try it. And everybody's, what are you, nuts? He's going to kill everyone. Well, that goes back to the old gag that happened right after he got elected. I mean, and it's been going on ever since. President Trump could declare we found the cure for cancer and the Democrats would condemn him for it. That's exactly what's happening right now. Is he's being optimistic and hopeful and trying to get us through this pandemic, and which I think there's really not that much to get through, but the Democrats are condemning him for it. But I digress. Just as Governor Gretchen Whitmer flipped from her self-righteous anti-hydroxychloroquine stance to one demanding the drug from Donald Trump, which she also did, by the way, it appears that public pressure brought in part by Donald Trump Jr. has seen her back off of a massive, cozy state contract to track Michigan residents during the pandemic. Tracking. Yep. Because, well, you know how important it is to get medical records without a warrant, contrary to the wording of the Fourth Amendment, and you know how key it is to hand government graft to friends in high places. Well, according to the Free Beacon, Tuesday, Ms. Whitmer smiled her way through a nice fat dismissal of the Bill of Rights, even as she handed a lucrative package to some Democrat-connected data giants. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer this week awarded a coveted coronavirus tracking contract to a noted Democratic consultant and information firm. And that raised concerns that the commission, which is meant to help track and halt the disease spread in the state, may be poised to reap political benefits for the Democratic Party from its gathering of COVID-19 intel. Huh. Well. The firm? The Whitmer administration announced Monday it had awarded a contract for contact tracing in the state to Every Action VAN, an arm of the Democratic data behemoth NGP VAN. The liberal firm works with all of the major Democratic campaign committees and hundreds of labor unions across the country. According to its website, and will help organize remote phone banking and track information and contacts for Michigan, according to a state press release. The group's head, Stu Trevelyan, is currently managing Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden's voter outreach and fundraising efforts. Well, that's convenient. NGP VAN was previously paid by Whitmer's 2019 gubernatorial campaign, according to state finance records. So she's using state money, voter, taxpayer money, to pay a firm which helped her campaign for her election to do contact tracing. How about that? Well, the outcry was so loud she backed herself up and reversed her course. She's changed positions. In fact, the group, NGP VAN, Every Action VAN, has suddenly, just disappeared. Their website's gone. Their social media's gone. They have disappeared. They've deleted all traces of themselves on the web. I don't know about you, but I would call that suspicious. Just a little more for you to keep in mind. Okay? All right. Well, the great one, the Messiah himself, the one, the only, the Barack Hussein Obama, the man who...
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Yeah, that guy. Wednesday afternoon, he criticized the Trump administration for failing to create a coherent national plan during the coronavirus pandemic. He tweeted, "While we continue to wait for a coherent national plan to navigate this pandemic, states like Massachusetts are beginning to adopt their own public health plans to combat this virus before it's too late." Well, before I move forward, I just a couple of things. Do you mind if I observe? Do you? It's observations, insight, absurdity. Do you mind if I observe the absurdity and draw an insight from it? Do you mind? Is it okay with you? I'm going to do it whether it's okay with you or not, because here we go. A coherent national plan. That's not how the country is designed to work. This is something I've been harping on recently, and that is that we are a nation of sovereign states, not a sovereign nation, not a nation state. We are a nation of sovereign states. We are a republic. We are not a democracy. We are not supposed to have a coherent national plan to navigate this pandemic. Actually, what is supposed to happen is that states like Massachusetts adopt their own public health plans to combat the virus. We're back to what we talked about the other day, and that is, it is far, far better to have 50 potential working plans which could be adopted, successful plans which could be adopted by everyone, than to have one. 50 states, 50 versions of a plan. The ones that work the best, everybody else tries to adapt to. Remembering that each state has different needs. Each state has different economics. Each state is driven by different industry and different business. Each state is unique. And the plan for each state has to be unique. to meet their needs. What works in New York City actually doesn't work in New York City because the people running it are idiots, would not work in a small town in Iowa. It's just not going to happen. So Barack Obama is wrong, and he has been wrong about practically everything. The thing about this tweet is that Barack Obama is the last person in the world who should be criticizing the federal response to a pandemic. Does he think we've forgotten he botched not one but two pandemics? Barack Obama's Department of Health and Human Services declared the H1N1 pandemic a public health emergency on April 29, 2009, but didn't declare it a national emergency until October, 2 months after the World Health Organization declared it a pandemic, and after 1,000 Americans had already died and millions were infected. If you think he was taking the outbreak seriously at the time, the facts beg to differ. On the same day that the public health emergency was declared, Obama played golf. Now, people, liberals, leftists, progressives, have been picking at President Trump about playing golf. But Obama played golf too, and he played golf at some crucial times. He didn't close travel with Mexico to slow the spread of the virus because his administration was too concerned with the economic impact of doing so. Despite being less infectious than the coronavirus, H1N1 went on to infect 60.8 million Americans. Obama only declared H1N1 a national emergency a few short days before a congressional oversight panel slammed his administration's response to the pandemic as inadequate and incomplete. Representative Yvette Clark, a Democrat from New York, said of the government's response, "Our early warning and detection systems were inadequate. Some key planning activities were incomplete. We didn't have a good approach to provide health care under pandemic conditions, and levels of preparedness for pandemic influenza were unclear. Unfortunately, our failure to develop these systems, activities, and policies cost us during the response." The Obama administration's response to H1N1 was so inept that it was plagued by vaccine shortages, a failure that cost lives, because the vaccine that was promised would come too late to help most Americans who would be infected. Obama's response to the Ebola pandemic was also so bad that The Hill described it as, quote, "an anchor threatening to sink the Obama presidency," after both the White House and the CDC said that there were multiple shortcomings in the administration's response. Obama didn't appoint an Ebola czar to coordinate the administration's global efforts to contain the Ebola pandemic until 7 months after the outbreak began, which was after it became the worst Ebola outbreak ever recorded. He also didn't implement any travel bans from the West African countries most affected by the outbreak. So really, Obama should just shut up. The Trump administration's response to the coronavirus has been a lot better than Obama's response to H1N1 or Ebola. And that kind of takes us back to this whole thing about it being a federal response, a national response. The Obama administration, so deeply entrenched in its progressivism, didn't believe that it was the state's responsibility to deal with things, to come up with the 50 plans, or to develop 50 plans to implement in the event something would happen. They believed it was a centralized government responsibility to deal with the issue. And still, they dropped the ball, and they dropped it in a major way. The Obama administration was a catastrophic failure on many levels. And this is just one example of what a catastrophic failure it was. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Heading into the final segment for the final podcast of the week. It's the Friday edition, April 24th, 2020. I was scanning Twitter earlier this morning. I follow Britt Hume on Twitter, one of many. And he referred to an article in the Wall Street Journal, which I want to share with you now. The title of the article is, Maybe the Experts Were Right About COVID-19 in the First Place. Or the first time. They originally wanted herd immunity, realizing lockdowns would incur the disasters we are seeing. It's time to confront an awful possibility about the lockdowns in which many of the world's economies now find themselves. The experts might have been right for the right the first time. The first time was not so long ago, February to mid-March, when official opinion on how to best grapple with the new coronavirus pandemic was very different. The distinguishing characteristic was modesty. The stated goal was not to vanquish the virus, but merely try to control its spread so as to not overwhelm the healthcare systems. Officials also understood public patience with draconian measures would wear thin quickly and demanded politicians exercise caution when asking the public to take on burdens. Those opinions now are widely derided, often in insulting terms. Yet subsequent events suggest they're mainly correct. Let's take each in turn. First, we can't stop the virus, we can only slow it. This is the biggest fact about the pandemic that remains politically impossible to say. The trouble started in mid-March when herd immunity, previously the tacit or acknowledged endgame for most of the world, became a toxic phrase. Critics pointed out that allowing the virus to spread in a controlled manner would cost lives. They presented a stark alternative of total lockdown or the disaster of Italian hospitals, with no middle ground. But if those experts have a more plausible plan than taking a controlled path to herd immunity, the world is waiting to hear it. Experts propose instead either that we await the arrival of a vaccine or that we ramp up testing and contact tracing of the infected. Good luck. A vaccine is a year or more in the future, if one ever emerges. An effective mass test and trace regime would require a level of competence and focus that typically eludes modern governments, not to mention an invasion of privacy, at least in the U.S., that might be unconstitutional. Events will provide two tests of whether the experts were right the first time. Sweden is conspicuous for not only its lack of a formal lockdown, but also for its leaders' laser focus on the question of health system capacity. Sweden's fans are perhaps too quick to overlook the human tragedy of the resulting higher death toll, but its critics should be more curious about whether, if permanent suppression of the virus is impossible, this approach might stave off subsequent disaster by moderating future peaks of the virus, with fewer of the human costs associated with a lockdown. We'd better hope Sweden's approach works, because the alternative gives little cause for optimism. We can't lock down our economies waiting for a vaccine that may never arrive. And as Germany, Denmark, Austria, and other European countries emerge from their lockdowns, officials all but admit the virus will start spreading again. That's why they are reopening in stages. The virus's second surges in China, Singapore, and Hong Kong serve as a warning. The original conventional wisdom acknowledged the reality that draconian lockdowns were merely delayed. They merely delayed the inevitable spread, and that sheltering the inevitable spread, and that sheltering populations rather than slowly cultivating herd immunity would lead to quickly rising infection rates once countries reopened. Next, we can't ask the public to lock down indefinitely. This was articulated most forcefully in the UK, where Prime Minister Boris Johnson took merciless flack for trying to delay the sternest pandemic mitigation efforts on the grounds that the public would find it hard to comply for long. Mr. Johnson's critics promptly fell down the rabbit hole of investigating the scientific basis for that insight within the field of behavioral studies. Turns out there isn't a lot. While overlooking its obvious truth in observed human nature. Sustained, severe curtailment of daily liberties has only ever been enforceable at the point of a spear or a gun. Sure enough, nearly 5 weeks into Britain's lockdown, its police forces worry the public won't tolerate much more enforcement. Rule-loving Germans comply less and less with social distancing, to judge by a University of Mannheim tracker poll that found that more than 50% of respondents had violated rules against visiting friends at least once in the week ending April 21, up from around 30% in the last week of March. Protests have erupted in the U.S., and near riots in some of Paris's volatile suburbs. Leaders are asking us to do the impossible. Cut off almost all social contact indefinitely, at often incalculable individual cost, and then belittling those who object as anti-science rubes. At the start of this pandemic, some leaders seemingly understood how destructive the resulting loss of trust between rulers and citizenry would be. They abandoned that insight at their own and our peril. We've all placed our bets now and can only hope for the best, but it will be well worth it for voters and students of public policy alike to ask in coming years whether policymakers' first instincts were their best. And if so, why we made it so difficult for them to follow those intuitions. And that is from the Wall Street Journal, an article by Joseph Sternberg. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's right on the money. We should have gone with the original instinct, which was cautious containment, knowing that we couldn't lock people up for a long time and expect things to be all right. We have an economy that is crumbling around us. I believe under the guidance of a president who actually knows something about finance and knows something about how our economy really does work and has a track record of success in the private business industry and the private sector to prove that, I believe that we can recover. Of course, this is not what the progressive Democrats want. They want him to fail because what they're concerned with is power and control and seizing the White House again. Even if that means you have to stay locked in your house for months on end with no source of income, completely and totally dependent on government handouts. That's what they'll do to win the election if they can. But I have confidence after seeing what President Trump has been able to do in the last 3.5 years. Resurrecting an economy that Barack Obama said was never going to happen again. You remember he told us that we had a new normal, that things would never be that way again. But when President Trump stepped into office and began repealing everything that was preventing a recovery began to happen. And when people in business who know business and know the markets, they know finance, they know how the real world really operates, when those people saw they had a president who wasn't going to lay a minefield in front of them, they stepped out and started working again, and the economy began to turn around and then began to explode. We're watching the reversal right now of many horrible political mistakes made by the previous administration. Horrible mistakes which would be reenacted again if they were ever to get control again. Because they firmly believe that they're right, regardless of all of the evidence to the contrary. They interpret everything through the lens of progressivism, which means they will continue to lie to themselves and to anyone who will listen to them. Because the lies are the only thing they can believe. The truth contradicts their lies. Reality contradicts their lies. But they won't listen. They won't see. And in their deafness and blindness, they're leading America into the hole if we ever allow them back in power again. So we can. Just remember the example we have going on right now. The people cheering for us to stay locked up in our homes are doing that so they can win an election, not because they care about you. And that's something to remember over the weekend. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here for the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?